I'll just say that if you get
okay. Transportation Finance Committee will come to order. And we have a busy schedule. The Owls is up on the sixth floor. I've been busy working away, and one of them is on the third floor, actually. Representative Reeder will be presenting the House File 2800. But first, I would call for a word of approval of the minutes of March 23rd.
Mr. Chair, I'll move approval of the minutes.
All right. Any discussion on that? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Minutes are adopted. And Representative Reeder, are you ready? Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, House File 2800 is a composite of many things. We've been trying to make everybody happy as much as we can. We have addressed the rural metro situation to make it as compatible and as equally as it can. We have a balanced bill. We've addressed the rural and metro transit, and we've really looked at many of the other items. You've got a 36-page bill, but a lot of it is language, and some of the language I put the responsibility on MnDOT and us as legislators for a little bit of oversight. The big thing that we've done, again, like I pointed out, we have taken care that we've got a balanced bill. We've taken care of some of the problems as much as we could within the budget constraints that we have. And I do have, and I certainly want to thank the staff that worked with us all summer, basically. We've worked on it all summer, except that, you know, we haven't included all of you people most of the time, because if you ever try to put a bill together in the committee, good luck. It's bad enough after you get a bill together to try to keep it together. So that was the reason we think we got a good composite of a bill that addresses all those particular areas. And the other thing that happens, it provides a stable funding, I think, for the transit, which we didn't have before, for both metro and rural. And it also addresses the problem which we recognize and the public recognizes, the problem we have with the deteriorating, that's a bad tough word, infrastructure, specifically bridges. And we've done a good job, I think, addressing the bridge problem, especially what we call the fracture critical bridges. And I'd just like to comment a little bit on that before we get into it. The fracture critical bridges are those bridges which are identified basically by a federal, not a requirement, but all the states and everyone inspects the bridges on practically the same basis. And as kind of an end result, they have a sufficiency factor of 0 to 100. And what it amounts to after bridge inspections, if there's a sufficiency factor of less than 50, those are what they call fracture critical for the most part. That means they should be major repair or else restoration or else closed. And we do a pretty good job of addressing that problem from a financial point. One thing the bill does not do, we don't identify projects, but we provide the monies to take care of the particular projects that we think need the critical, need some work. And as we go through the bill, I certainly point that out, because that's definitely on the local system and also on the trunk highway system. So I also would like to acknowledge the person sitting on next to me up here, the staffers that worked hard with most of us, with some of us, especially me, all summer, changing and going back and forth. I'd like to say, too, that we did meet with the governor's staff, pretty much weekly or biweekly up to the time of special session, and after the special session, we tried to put everything together. So what we have is really a good balanced bill. It also addresses, I think, the fact that it would provide some economic incentives early on. If the bill were to pass, a lot of this money that we provide in the bill could also provide an economic stimulus. They could go to work right away.
Do you want to take questions now or let the witness?
Any time.
Mr. Chair, I don't have a question, but because he's recognizing staff, I thought members around this table should know that Corinne Zewers is also fiscal analyst for capital investments, and she traveled on all of our trips around the state. So there were a lot of days we kept her busy from morning to night. So probably on rare occasions does a fiscal analyst get assigned to two committees that are fast-tracking the way we are and that travel the way we are. And so I wanted to just acknowledge her role in both of those.
Thank you, Representative Hollister. We really put her through the paces. And frankly, that's what I was going to acknowledge. He's done a great job, and so has Mr. Burris. It's for many of you, I think you met Mr. Burris last session, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's really the guts of this bill. That with us, we give them the ideas, and they put it together. And I'd like to also comment what you have in your packet. You've got a breakdown on the bill, phase two categories, state roads, local roads, municipal roads. You also have a breakdown to show what each of your counties or your municipalities would receive under this bill if it were to pass. But the one thing I'd like to caution to you, when you look at the numbers, everything doesn't have the three zeros behind it. So be certain you add, this is in thousands, and it's easy to overlook. And the other thing is when you look at your breakdown, when it shows that additional monies for each year, like 2009, 2010, the subsequent ones are add-ons to the previous one you had. So the best thing to look is at your 10-year average, or not average, your 10-year total. That'll give you a good idea, and then you could average it out. You should remember, if the bill were to pass, 2009 is a short year. So that's why your monies don't show up that much. It doesn't show that you're getting that much money in your first year. And I didn't acknowledge a staff legislative assistant is Susie Maher, and committee administrator is Abby Mann. Yeah, right. I mixed up the man and all. We have two, Mr. Chair, we have two pages, and I'm not aware we should acknowledge we do have pages if they come around if you need anything, if you would. Do you know their names, Abby or any?
Kepha and Melissa.
Okay.
Melissa.
So they'll be, if you need anything, come around.
Thank you.
If I may, Mr. Chair, I'll just give a summary, basically, the bill, and I probably won't get into the detail. I can, but I'll let Mr. Burris and Corinne Zewers deal with the numbers more so than myself. I'll start out in saying that there's a gas tax in the bill. There's no doubt about it. We don't have any source of revenue other than generally in the bills that we have. Gas tax, motor vehicle license, or sales tax, and we don't have. One thing we don't have is a wheelage tax in the bill. I think that was previously in the bill. The wheelage tax that's in statute now for those counties that have it stays in effect, but we don't have a wheelage tax. But the gas tax, we start out with a incremental gas tax. We start out with a 2 cent gas tax within practically 21 or 30 days after the bill is passed. You can't implement it right away. And then a 3 cent gas tax add-on in September 15th. And on top of the gas tax, we have a 2.5 cent maximum. It isn't 2.5, but it's capped at 2.5 cents, a surtax on the gas tax. That will roll in, and it rolls up to a maximum of 2.5 up and down based on the amount of bond interest and principal that we have to pay. So there's a variable there. In addition to that, we also index the gas tax to the CPI. Now, there is, I think, where a lot of confusion is. A lot of individuals apparently think the indexing is a big number. You have to remember the indexing is applied if the rate of the CPI is 2 or 3%. That's only that portion is applied to the, in this case, now after the bill is affected to the 25-cent gas tax. So it's not a 4 or 5-cent increase every year. And also that gas tax indexing can be addressed by the legislature every 6 years. The department makes a report, and the legislature can determine if they want to keep on with it or quit. Really, that's about what it amounts to. We also have a motor fuel tax credit, and the rationale behind that is that it appears the lower income people at least it's always always assumed that it has a harder or worse impact on them than some of the others. And we do provide for a motor fuel tax credit. And I'll let Mr. Burris explain that one, because that has to be not determined, but it's actually some data that we need to the tax experts and the tax committees. And it's kind of a confusing thing, but it's based on the lower income brackets and the income tax. The big critical thing in this bill, not critical, but the big bucks and the big impact is with bonding. We have basically $2.2 billion in trunk highway bonding for 10 years. We have $500 million each year for the first 2 years. So there's $1 billion for the first 2 years, and I'll explain that rationale. But that first 2 years, that $500 or $500 million each year is broken into $300 million for bridges and $200 million for roads. So if you add up the 2 years initially, we have $600 million in trunk highway bonds the first 2 years. And the rationale for that is, if you look at the data of the reports that we receive from MnDOT, and many of you have it, if you add up the total amount, or the dollar amount, of the, what we call the fracture critical bridges on a trunk highway, there are 13 bridges that are identified as fracture critical. Now, you recognize, too, that varies throughout the year. Something could happen, something goes up, or they could repair when it goes down. But basically, the list that we had from MnDOT, the 13 fracture critical bridges, the total cost to replace those was $660 million. Now, we provide right off the bat, the first 2 years, $600 million. Did I say $660 million, didn't I? Right. So we provide $600 million. You should recognize in the bonding bill, anything that we do, whether it's for local bonding, local bridges, or for trunk highway bonding, that also is not the total what they would use for the bridge, because that leverages some money. That leverages, and especially that could leverage some money in a trunk highway, maybe not as much as local bridges leverage, because local bridges can leverage some federal money, some state bond money, property tax money, local money, and that sense. So usually the ratio for a local bridge is probably 7 to 10. For every $7, you probably can leverage a total of $10. For the trunk highways, I don't know exactly what it would leverage, because the feds always have a different percentage. It could be 80-20, 90-10, 75-25, or 50-50, or nothing. So we really don't know what the totals are in that, but we feel confident that the $600 million will address those 13 critical bridges. And I think many of you are aware which the critical bridges are. We don't identify anything in the bridges in the bill, but there's certainly the MnDOT, if you want to say realistically, if this bill were to pass, they basically could let contracts on all those bridges right after the bill passes, if they would use certain procedures like design-build. And I'm not a proponent of design-build, but you know, 35W is a design-build job. So technically, they could put under contract all of those 13 bridges, and you definitely would have them built within 2 years, would be my opinion. Because normally, these structures are a bridge, unless it be a design-build really on an emergency situation, would take normally 2 years to complete. So you don't need all your money the first year. You probably wouldn't pay it all out. So there's a lot of latitude in here for MnDOT to accommodate and take care of what we call the really major problems in the infrastructure, especially in bridges. And again, remember, in the 300 or the 500, the 300 and 200, the 200 is for highways or whatever they want to use it for within their programming period. So it's probably a situation that bails us out, as far as when I say us, all of us, to address some of the problems we have within the highway system. The bonding bill, again, like to point out, we have in this bill the trunk highway bonds and also the local road bonds. Now, the local road bonds are general obligation bonds. The trunk highway bridge bonds are trunk highway bonds. We can't spend trunk highway bond money on local bridges. and we normally don't use GO bonds for anything in highways, in trunk highways. We actually haven't done it to that extent. I think we've had one case where we had $100 million or something. But generally, we've never had this amount of bonding where we indicate how we're going to pay for it. This bill, for all practical purposes, addresses how we're going to pay off the bonds. We just aren't bonding and saying down the road you're going to take it out of your budget. To some degree, that may happen, depending on how the bonds are sold in a particular year. But generally, that's why there's 2.5 cents on the gas taxes in this bill, is to pay off the principal and interest on our bonds. And as we point out, that's a pretty steep bill. But again, with the cost of increasing cost of materials and building and stuff, I think it behooves us to get some money out there early. Certainly, I think the department will save money as soon as they can replace some of these bridges or infrastructure. Do you have a question, Mr.
Well,
Chair?
I wasn't going to do that. Do you want to take questions as we go, or is that what
fine,
you
mean? Time.
Well, Representative Leader has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to jump in there, Representative Leader, on the bonding, do we have a schedule on the, has Crane put together a schedule on the payments on this?
We have it, yes. It isn't in your pack, no.
Could we get a look at that money so we can,
get it, yes.
So I can figure out how this bonding provisions work?
I have a run on it. Okay.
And, Mr. Chairman, is this bonding money let out a certain amount each year, or how do we do that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Magnus, the department determines how much they want to let out each year up to that amount, to $300 million. They're authorized to let out $300 million each year.
That's it.
For the first 2 years.
Yeah.
And after that, it's $150 million each year.
Okay.
Thank you. Good.
Representative Leader, I just want to make sure I understand. I think is it $500 million in years one and two in bonding, $300 million for bridges and $200 million for roads.
Mr. Chair and Representative Moore, that's correct. That's on the trunk highway bonds.
Mm-hmm.
And the local bonds, I didn't indicate local bonds. The local bonds, the GO bonds, we have $50 million for local bridges and $10 million for what they call safe roads. That's GO bonds. So in reality, we have $660 million in bonding. That's the first. Well, it isn't quite correct. The local bonds actually only for the first 2 years. They don't continue beyond this biennium. So the others continue for the 10 years. We also made an adjustment in the tab fees. If you remember, in Governor Ventura's administration, he capped it and he lowered the tab fees. We restore much of that what he cut and took the caps off. And what it amounts to, if you look at, we changed the depreciation schedule, but if you look at it, motor vehicle license for cars or vehicles are based on the ad valorem, in other words, the value of the vehicle. And that's 1.25 of the percent of the value of the vehicle plus $10. And in no case will you get an increase in your license fee, and you should remember this, unless you buy a new vehicle. And it doesn't have to be a high-priced vehicle or a low-priced vehicle, but once you buy a new vehicle, you're subject to the new tab fee schedule. And it's never less than present statute is $25 plus 10. Your minimum is $35. $25 plus 10. Everybody's got a $10 on there. So the minimum is $25 plus 10. So basically your minimum is $35, and that remains that way. And it depends on where you hit in that depreciation schedule what your money would be. But basically, no one's license cost should increase unless you buy a new vehicle.
I better go buy one right away.
Yep. Is there a question?
Question?
Mr. Chairman, I want to... When does this kick in? Because I want to buy one pretty quick, right?
Actually, I'm glad... Mr. Chair, thank you. Mr. Chair and Representative Magnus, I'm glad you asked that question because I forgot to say it on the others. This kicks in actually after the bill is signed, I believe that's the first time. But the one thing I didn't tell you, the gas tax surtax really doesn't kick in until 2010. Because we aren't really selling the bonds at this point, so you aren't doing it until 2010. And we also have the indexing doesn't kick in until, is that 2010? Mm-hmm. 2011, yeah. So a lot of those two factors don't kick in that early. So you really aren't going to see a gas tax increase for about a year and a half that's going to be over 5 cents. And we do have, you know, a lookout. The legislature can review that within 6 years. Oh, I think Representative Magnus are passing out the debt schedule now.
Thank you.
As you'll see, there are times where, depends on how they sell the bonds, if you want to call it a negative situation, but it's been our opinion, we're at least providing the means to pay off this bond, and it might be we provided enough money in this new bill, at least, that there's money in there to pay off the bond, even if it comes out their ordinary operating budget. The motor vehicle lease sales tax, we're talking about motor vehicle leases, not a car rental, but motor vehicle lease sales tax. We split that, and that rolls in 2010. We split that to 50% to Greater Minnesota Transit, and 25% to Metro, and 25% is used, we split to 25% again for county stated highways and municipal stated highways. And the reason we do that here, we don't have any basis to fund rural transit because you can't use trunk highway monies there. And that's the only way we can get any general fund monies into rural transit. So in some of these items that we're talking about, that's why you'll see that we fund that money with rural transit, because we don't have any other source, or even for metro transit. We'll get into the metro transit later, but we're coming into it. In the metro transit, we have a half-cent sales tax proposal. That half-cent is in the 7-county metro area, and Mr. Burris, should I just go through it quickly, and we'll let you talk to it later? If that's okay, I'm just going to give a general. We'll have Mr. Burris explain that one too, because that can become confused. It's for the 7-county metro area, and it's a half-cent sales tax. It does not require a referendum. It's our opinion that they built a twin stadium without a referendum. They levy a sales tax, or a tax on property tax without a referendum. And basically, this is what the counties that met with us, the 7 counties, requested. So that's the reason for that.
Mr. Chairman.
And actually,
Representative Magnus. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to go back just a second to the sales tax on lease motor vehicles you were just talking about, so I can get some numbers. What's the estimate on what that would raise, the total?
I'll have a screen going through these. Yeah. You want to do that now? Yeah. If I've only got two more things left, if we do that, we'll have to go through the whole works. Is that okay?
Sure.
Yes. And the next item that we have on is the Greater Minnesota sales tax. Now that's a scary thing, because everybody thinks we're going to have a sales tax in Greater Minnesota. We had to put that in because basically it's in statute right now. Any county can have a sales tax if you have a referendum, and it's those counties that have a population, I think, I forget there's a cutoff, but in our opinion, it's not going to happen except in the metro area. But it's in our bill. We had to put it in there. So all of you that are rural members, you probably can get pretty excited about it, but I think if you take a hard look at it, it won't happen. That's not the intent of the bill, to have a rural sales tax. The other item that we have, and then I'll let Mr. Burris and Corinne go, is we took the change in the county state aid formula. Remember, that was been a contention for many years, and the Association of Minnesota Counties finally agreed what that formula should change. So what it amounts to for the existing gas tax, which is 20 cents, the formula, distribution formula for that is 62 trunk highways, 29 for counties, and 9 for municipalities. That's for the 20 cents. But for the new monies, that's distributed 60-40. 60% based on needs and 40% based on vehicle registration. That only applies to the new money, anything over the 20 cents. And that was pretty much worked out by AMC. I know we battled that one for a long time. That's the rationale behind it. So, Mr. Chair, at this point, I'll let Mr. Burris and Ms. Seward give you some numbers.
Who's next? Mr. Burris?
You got a mic for it? Well, I like you over there.
Mr. Chair and members, would you like us to walk through the numbers? Would you like us to walk through the bill and the appropriations? What would be best?
Which chart do you want to start on?
Actually, Mr. Chair, if I could suggest, if you go through the appropriations first and then work through the numbers, is that okay? Then you've got a good idea where the money is going, and then after that you can see where it really ends up.
Mr. Chair and members, Article 1 contains the appropriations that are in the bill, and by way of setting context, these appropriations are funds are made from the additional revenues that are raised in the bill. That's kind of the funding source. For transportation, there are appropriations for Greater Minnesota Transit, Rail, and Port Development Assistance. For state roads, there are appropriations for operations and maintenance, investment support, which is quite a bit of the planning functions for MnDOT, and debt service. You might note that there isn't a state road construction appropriation in this article. That's because that appropriation is built into the trunk highway bonding. Also for the Department of Transportation, there are appropriations for county state aid and municipal state aid funds. And then for the Met Council, there's an appropriation for Hiawatha operating costs. And for the Department of Public Safety, there are appropriations for the State Patrol for additional troopers for patrolling highways and for capital security. Also in Article 1 on for appropriations, there's an appropriation for both fiscal year 08 and fiscal year 09 that are in relation to the I-35W bridge collapse. These are the amounts that MnDOT has indicated they would be seeking as spending authority in relation to federal aid that's being provided back to the state.
Representative Silver?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Does the last two appropriations then take all of the appropriation concerns that MnDOT had for the TAG group? That completes that appropriation.
Mr. Burr?
Mr. Chair, Representative, these appropriations just cover a portion of the overall obligation authority that the federal government has provided, but it does cover, in our understanding, it does cover fiscal years 2008 and 2009.
Mr. Chairman, the state group had given some authority, like $90 million, I think, in that area. So this completes that appropriation from the federal government, is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative, this is in addition to that authority.
Very good, thank you.
Mr. Chairman? Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To that point, and Representative Solberg's on that group, and Chairman Leader's on the group too, and I'm confused about why we're not allowing the federals to our Department of Transportation to access all of the federal money that's set aside for the bridge here.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I asked the question because I think this does it.
Yeah.
We've done the $90 million or something before that appropriation, and this completes it. That's why I asked the question if this completed that.
But Mr. Chairman, it doesn't do that.
Representative Magnus?
Mr. Chair, members, the $55 million and $77 million were numbers that we received from the Department of Transportation on what they needed for appropriations for fiscal year 08 and fiscal year 09. The difference between what we've appropriated of the federal funds is $96 million, and what they've done is they've actually used part of their appropriation, last year's appropriation, for the 35W bridge collapse. And the difference, that $96 million difference, is based on transfers that MnDOT made of projects that they've pushed into 2010. So what they've told us that they've needed for fiscal year 08 and for fiscal year 09 are the $55 million and the $77 million to complete the bridge project.
Oh, that's good news.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, that's not allowing MnDOT to spend all the money that the federals have set aside for this, Mr. Chairman. Going back to our discussion, we could have MnDOT, I think, come down and clarify this if we want, because it's my recollection that the Federal Highway Fund Administration estimated the bridge total reclamation, total recovery, and construction of the new bridge to be $371 million.
$71 million, but it
gets confusing. But I think they have the information for us. And our group, Representative Solberg and I are on, and Representative Leader and I are on, have allowed MnDOT to spend $143 million of it. So we've got about $200 and some million sitting there that group would not allow MnDOT to spend or to access. And I'm confused about just where this doesn't add up to that kind of money. So what I'm hearing the testifier say, what Corn say, is basically what MnDOT's cash flow requirement is. It's not allocating or allowing them to spend the whole amount of money. If I'm correct on this,
Representative Fogel?
Well, Mr. Chairman, it seems to me that MnDOT said that they needed a certain amount of money, and we looked at their project list and appropriated the amount of money to carry them through the lettings that they would have in March, and we said at that particular time that they would appropriate the rest of their needs. Now, they said to us, I think in October sometime, that they needed all kinds of money, and I'm surprised that right now, if they're saying that they only need 55 and 77, so they had two different kinds of messages being taken. I think we need some clarification on this.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's my point. I can't understand yet why we're not allowing our Department of Transportation to access the federal funds to the money.
Well, Mr. Chairman, they are accessing all the federal funds. I mean, they're accessing that by
I wonder if that has a bearing on what we're talking about here in this presentation.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's important. I think we need to have some clarification of what those numbers should be.
Well,
but maybe you want to do it at some other time. I'm willing to do that.
Representative,
Mr. Chair, we could check that out. But basically, these are the numbers given by MnDOT. We have no reason to question, and we could check it out. But that's the numbers they gave us.
Are you okay from the commissioner's office on that, the fiddles, or?
We'll check it out before tomorrow's meeting.
Okay. Representative Holbert.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. What I also heard at the table was because projects were pushed to 2010. And so I guess what I don't understand is why we don't give them all of the federal money that the feds have approved that's on its way to Minnesota. Why don't we give them the spending authority so MnDOT doesn't have to push projects off, because we as a legislature have our little purse and are, you know, handing out a few dollars here and a few dollars there.
Mr. Chairman, that's not quite true, Representative. We asked them for their lettings through March, and we have appropriated all the money that they said that they were going to let through March. We're not there yet. The February 4th, our February advertisement, and March lettings. So if they push things on to pass in 2010, that's being pushed off for some other reason, other than them not having the authority to spend the money. Because I sat through all those lists upon lists, and we made sure that they provided us with the list of what they were going to let and advertise in February. In fact, I think the advertisement date may be February 15th or something like that, and the letting date is like March 22nd. And all the appropriations that we gave them brought us up to that particular point. So if they push something off in the 2010, that's for some other reason other than the appropriation. But I think it's okay to have us have some clarification on that with the MnDOT at the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, this really doesn't impact the total revenue of this bill. This is the authorization to spend some federal funds, and if the MnDOT didn't tell me any different or our people, there's no way I can say it's a different number. We'll check that out for tomorrow's meeting.
Okay.
And for the committee members that may not be aware of it, MnDOT can't spend any money until they get authorization from the legislature, and that's the problem we have here, even if it's federal money. And that's what we're trying to resolve. So there could be federal money there, and if they don't get authorization, they can't use it to match, or we can't match it. So we'll check that out for tomorrow.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like some clarification because I certainly don't want to come back here in meetings and have our group complain to MnDOT that you're not spending the federal funds. I'd like to get this resolved.
If we're going to get that data for tomorrow, that's what I'm trying to tell you.
I'm just saying, that's what my concern is, because if we're going to micromanage them, we better be ready for the results here.
Okay, let's move along with the presentation, please.
Mr. Chair, members, one other item in Article 1 is an appropriation for a study of capturing value from transportation infrastructure projects. As an appropriation to the University of Minnesota. First study, yes. Mr. Chair and members, I'll continue somewhat briefly through the rest of the bill. Article 2 contains the trunk highway bonding as well as the GO bonding. The first item in that is the debt service surcharge that was mentioned by the chair. And this is a surcharge on the tax on motor fuels up to 2.5 cents per gallon of gasoline and proportionally for other types of motor fuel. And
Representative Holbrook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Leader testified that the surtax would not go into effect for a while, but it looks like if you look on page 8, lines 13 and 14, that it actually would go in effect in August of this year. So how does that work?
That's the bill you're referring to, page 8?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holbrook, I believe that Representative Leader was referring to the way in which the actual amount of surcharge ramps up the amount of trunk highway bonds kick in and require that surcharge to increase.
And so, Mr. Chair, that's a call. I thought the max that would be was 2.5%. So are you saying that we start out at 2.5% in August and then it goes higher than that after that?
No. Mr. Chair, Representative Holbrook, the math is 2.5 and it's cents, not percents.
Thank you. So what can we expect for to go in effect August 1st of 2008 given the debt service schedule that was passed out?
What line are you on, Representative?
I'm on page 8, lines 13 and 14.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holbrook, for fiscal year 2009, the expected amount under this provision is 0.5 cents. And for fiscal year 2010, the expected amount is 2.1 cents. it gets up to 2.5 cents starting in fiscal year 2011 and stays there for a number of years.
And Mr. Chair, do we have that on one of our seats here?
Mr. Chair, we can have that passed out as well.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, the Article 2 also contains a number of appropriations for trunk highway bonds. The first appropriation is for state road construction, and I'll just highlight a couple of pieces in that. As Representative Leader noted, the appropriations for state road construction are $500 million in fiscal years 2009 and 2010, and then $150 million per year for fiscal years 2011 through 2018. You might note, if you're looking through the text, that the SRC, or State Road Construction Appropriation, in fiscal year 09 looks to be a smaller amount. That's because it's additive of all the additional projects. So there's the SRC appropriation, but then there are also some fiscal year 09 appropriations for specific projects. I'll go ahead and jump into highlighting those. They include Great River Road, Urban Partnership Agreement. There are actually two Urban Partnership Agreement appropriations in this. What's covered in this bill is a portion of the overall Urban Partnership Agreement capital request, and this is the trunk highway bonding portion. There are also appropriations for the Mankato District Headquarters Building, truck station in Chaska, truck station design in both Rochester and Maple Grove, and jumping around just slightly, there's an appropriation as well to the transportation building's exterior, and that's to the Department of Administration. They handle that. Also, as part of the Department of Transportation appropriations, there is $50 million to the local bridge replacement program and $10 million to the local road improvement program. That pretty much summarizes the offer bond sale expenses, but that summarizes the key bonding appropriations. Article 3 covers highway user taxes and contains the increase and depreciation schedule change in the registration tax. It also contains the motor fuel tax credit. This tax credit is set up as a $25 refundable credit, so it's handled through an income tax return, and it's provided to filers who have a taxable income that's in the lowest bracket. Also in this article are the increases to the gasoline tax and other taxes on motor fuels. You might note, if you're looking through the language, that there are multiple provisions. This was set up this way because of how the revisor wanted to handle what is essentially a fairly temporary increase because of the phase-in. The initial increase of 2 cents happened shortly after enactment, and then the increase up raising it from there up to 5 cents occurs on September 15th. And so because of that shortness of time, there are multiple provisions. That's why that's structured that way. Also in this article on highway user taxes is the provision on indexing of the gas tax. That goes into effect starting in fiscal year 2011. Finally, there's the allocation of motor vehicle lease sales tax revenue. The way this allocation is set up is that first funds from the motor vehicle lease sales tax goes towards the motor fuel tax credit, and then of the remainder, it's allocated 50% to the Greater Minnesota Transit, 25% to Metro Area Transit, and 17.25% to County State Aid Highways, finally 7.75% to Municipal State Aid Streets.
Mr. Chairman.
And that's phased in over
fiscal
year
2011-2012.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Burris, I'd raised this question earlier. How much money is that? How much money do you estimate the motor vehicles lease sales tax to be per year?
Mr. Burris or Ms. Burris, I don't know who's got that one.
Mr. Chair, members, the motor vehicle lease sales tax would come at a loss to the general fund, and the total revenue generated by the motor vehicle lease sales tax, the current estimates, are for fiscal year 2009 about $43.7 million and about $44 million in fiscal year 10. The total 10-year total for the motor vehicle lease sales tax for 10 years is $488.8 million.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you. And as I understand it here, it's set up to go to 75% of that is set up to go to transit then. 50% Greater Minnesota, 25% Metro. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, members, what would happen is the sales or the tax credit would be taken off the top first, and then from that, the additional revenue would be put towards transit and local roads, with 50% going towards Greater Minnesota Transit.
And Mr. Chairman, how much is the how much of an increase is that, and what's it currently getting?
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, the increase, the total increase for transportation in fiscal year 10 is $6.3 million, and it increases up to around $15 million. In 2018 and or actually starting in 2012. For Greater Minnesota Transit, the increase is around $3.1 million in fiscal year 2010.
Mr. Chair and members, the next article covers local option taxes. This contains both the Metropolitan Transportation Area sales tax and the sales tax provision for Greater Minnesota. The Metropolitan Transportation Area sales tax is a 0.5% sales tax that is imposed based on a joint powers agreement that counties in the metropolitan area combined together to create. So it's administered by a joint powers board of counties that are participating, and the language here is fairly similar to last year with a couple of modifications, but essentially governs how the joint powers board allocates the revenue from the sales tax. That allocation is set up to be 50% going to transit projects, 25% to roads, and 25% that's a flexible, can go either way. One aspect.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going back to page 19, I'm interested in a little better understanding of an eligible county. Could you explain what that? Could you explain these definitions to me, just to
remember this? Magna, eligible county gets at the basic opt-in concept with the metro area sales tax. Eligible counties are the counties that can join the joint powers agreement. Get on the joint powers board and be a part of the arrangement. And it consists of all of the counties in the metropolitan area, in the seven-county core metropolitan area, any county that's adjoining that seven-county core, as well as any county that's adjoining a county that's already in. So it's an opt-in arrangement based on counties that are in the seven-county metro area or are adjoining.
So,
Representative Chairman, how many counties is this going to, would this possibly include when you're all done with this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, it's dependent on how many counties choose to opt in. It would start with the seven-county core, but yeah, because of the adjacent counties being able to opt in as well, it could be all of Minnesota.
Could be all of Minnesota?
It could be all counties in Minnesota.
I'm confused again because I thought I understood to the seven county metro. My understanding of this was the seven county metro area was going to get a half cent sales tax with no referendum, and the outstate counties would have to vote on it. But now you're telling me they could all get in if I had four county commissioners, they could say they want to be in that. We all be in the party here paying for
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, that would be the case if the county were adjoining a county that was already in. So it would, the area in which the tax is imposed would need to grow to whichever county you have in mind. If it's currently a collar county, it could join right away. If it's farther out, the taxing area would have to grow out to that point for that county to join in as well. It's not just any county, it's an adjoining one.
Well, Mr. Chairman, when is this, what kind of time frame would this be? In other words, okay, the seven county metros could do this now, and any eligible county around them, adjoining county around them, could do it right now then, as soon as it's set up. Is that...
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, yes, that's correct. And then any adjoining county to that group could opt in as they so choose.
When? Well, what time frame would that be? That's the question I've got.
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, there isn't a set time frame for being in or out. It would be open for the counties to join in at any given point down the road.
So, Mr. Chairman, within a year we could have the whole state then in. That's the question I'm posing.
Well, this isn't a pleasant surprise. Mr. Bruce, do you have any...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to clarify as well, Mr. Burris, and I'm looking at a map that I'm sharing with Representative Magnus. There are seven counties in the initial group upon a vote, and then we have the collar counties that are immediately adjacent to the seven metro counties. Rock County can't join right now in the bottom southwest corner. There would have to be a lot of counties, one after the other, all voting to join to reach the metro transit area before Rock County could join. Is that correct? Rock County can't join tomorrow.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, that is correct.
And Mr. Chair, if I may follow up.
Yep.
Greater Minnesota sales tax is not the same thing. It's actually a different provision, correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, that's correct. There's a separate provision governing sales tax in greater Minnesota. Essentially, for certain counties, either provision could apply, but it is a separate provision that requires a referendum and requires that the tax be for a specific transportation project.
Well, let's be very, Mr. Chair, if I might follow up. Let's be very careful, if I might. Rock County cannot join the Metro Area Transit District. Is that correct? The Metro Area Transit Plan, correct?
That's correct.
It can't raise a sales tax to join that group today. There are a lot of counties that would have to join first.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow is correct unless the conditions that we've been discussing have been met. A number of counties would indeed have to join as well in order for Rock County to be able to opt in as part of the Metro Transit or Metro, taxing district.
And so just to finish up, as Representative Morrow said at the outset, thank you, Mr. Chair, the greater Minnesota half-cent sales tax could occur in a place like Rock County, but only if the voters approve it, and only for a transportation project, and that tax sunsets when the transportation project is finished. Is that correct?
No.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, that's an accurate summary of the greater Minnesota transit, taxing provision.
Representative Carroll?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to put a little bit more flesh on the bone here by talking about a county that's near and dear to me, and that's Chicago County, that I represent, that is adjacent to the metropolitan seven-county area. Mr. Burris, I just wonder if you can just confirm my description of the options that would be available to Chicago County once this bill is enacted. The first is we could choose by a vote of the county board to support the rush line and other transit projects in Chicago County by joining the Joint Powers Board, or we could choose to, the county board could choose to send to referendum to be a standalone taxing district, taxing county, again dedicating to a specific project, most likely the rush line, our portion of it. And so if you're an adjacent county, which we are now, we have these two options. Is that correct? And I have a follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Yes, it is.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin, that is correct. Those adjoining counties would have two options.
And then, Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Burris. And although the chair slipped by calling you representative, I think you probably have worked harder than each of us have been earning our election certificates, and I just want to thank you for that. If Chicago County were to join, to just make sure that we have this illustrated fully, if the county board were to vote by majority to join the Joint Powers 7 County Board, to make it an 8 County Board, a la the MnDOT district, then our neighboring counties of Isanti and Pine could join, or they could choose to be a standalone individual county with a referendum required. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
I think I remember something from the law on this. Current law says that if you have a million people or more, you do not need a referendum. And that's probably what this is based on. Is anybody from the Minnesota Chamber here? Because the brochure that I just got in the mail today is incorrect. And I'm going to call out to the attention, see if I can get somebody on the phone from the office. Next.
Well, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I have a question to ask Representative Leader. Is your intent to go to the tax committee with this? Because I'm confused about this whole thing. Is this...
Mr. Magnus has got to go to taxes, got to go to ways and means, has to go to capital investment, and has to go to finance.
Yeah, thank you.
We'll do all that tomorrow and get done with it?
Not unless we get into the sales tax debate again.
I think we
got it cleared up, sir.
Okay, do we have more finance we would like to hear about, or is that the...
Mr. Chair, that's up to you.
Are there other questions, or Representative Hausman?
Are we having questions now, Mr. Chair?
Are you done with your presentation, Representative Leader?
Mr. Chair,
did we finish off the last?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we do have a handout if they want to go through some of that information. Ms. Lewis has it. We can go through the whole works, and all of you in your packet should have had. Your county to show what the county's getting, what your municipalities would get over the 10-year period.
Well, I don't know if we've finished. Have we done Article 5 and 6 yet?
I have additional questions.
You can do that. He didn't do that, apparently, yet.
Huh? I have additional questions, yet, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, I can go through those articles, or we can take questions as members have them, either way.
Mr. Chair, if I may suggest, we should complete the articles.
Right. Let's complete the articles.
Okay. Mr. Chair and members, Article 5 contains the change in apportionment formulas for the County State Aid Highway Fund. This is the same old revenue and new revenue. Essentially, current revenue is apportioned under the current CASA formula, and new revenue, which comes from the increase in the gas tax, the change in the registration tax, and the constitutional phase-in of motor vehicle sales tax, is allocated under a new formula. That new formula is 40% on the basis of registration and 60% on the basis of money needs in each county. Mr. Chair,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was still back on Article 4 yet, Mr. Burris, before you left me, because I had a few questions there on page 19, the joint powers agreement that we're talking about. I'm trying to understand that. I'm not understanding the length of time, because on line 31 it says this joint powers agreement may provide for a withdrawal of a participating county before the final termination of the contract. Could you explain that to me, what that means? This may provide, and how is this going to work?
Mr. Root? I'm Mr. Chair, Representative Magna. This the provision in this area sets out some basic guidelines on how the joint powers agreement can be arranged and provides a couple of requirements on what needs to go into the joint powers agreement. And one of the things that provides that can be included in how the agreement is set up is a method for counties that have previously opted in to then choose to opt back out. But the legislation is silent on how that mechanism would work, and it's left up to the county to choose the arrangement.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's disturbing. In number four, I'm also trying to figure that one out. May provide for a waiting voting system. In other words, my understanding that in line 25, upon resolution of the boards of at least four of the metropolitan counties, so four counties can vote to the boards of four counties can vote to set up to do this, and in any eligible county that joins, that means the ones that are next to it, right? I'm trying to figure out if in fact they do have a way to terminate this agreement, in what time frame this is, how long the agreement is. Is there going to be a weighted voting system? So, in fact, if some of the counties that Representative Morrow was talking about here decide they want to get in, and all of a sudden they've got a weighted system here, and some of the other counties are not being nice to those folks that decided to join. I'm trying to figure this out in my mind as how we do it.
Anybody else have a question? Representative Hausman, I think, was next.
No, mine is at the end. After
okay.
We finish, mine isn't too different.
Representative Hornstein, you're not. Okay, Representative Hogan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have a couple questions. I'm assuming from your runs you have some type of document that tells us, given the bonding, the rate of bonding and the debt service and what you project to be inflation, you've got some type of document that shows what the gas tax would be month to month, year to year for your 10-year projection. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holbrook, I don't have that with me, but I can provide
and,
that.
And Mr. Chair, I'd appreciate having that for tomorrow's meeting so we can see exactly where this thing is going with the inflation factors and the debt service, et cetera. And then just for clarification, the 2.5 cents, is that deposited only towards debt service, or does that also go into the CASA and MSA? And so does that, do those funds grow as a result of the surcharge?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, they also grow as well. The funds from the surcharge would be deposited as other gas.
69.29. Okay.
Yes.
And then, so on this distribution formula, the new money versus old money cut, in all cases, would any of the surcharge be new money?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, yes. The new money would include the gas tax increase, the indexing, and the gas tax surcharge, all three of those, along with the tab fees and the MVEST, the difference in the MVEST.
And, Mr. Chair, I see that there's a, on page 28, there's an inflation factor built into the registration tax of the consumer price index. So where we have seen that fund go up and down, there is guaranteed inflation under the old formula for that portion of the CASA fund that's attributed to the motor vehicle registration tax. Is that correct?
Mr. Burns?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, if I understand your question correctly, the inflation there is to allow for natural, if you will, natural growth in revenue from motor vehicle registrations that would occur if this, that would occur, would have occurred if this legislation hadn't been passed. In other words, it allows for some amount of growth on the old formula as, instead of being set to a specific amount that goes to the old formula and have all the additional growth due to general rise in prices going and being distributed under the new formula.
And so, Mr. Chair, we could, as we've seen over the past number of years, for number one, this part of the revenue to the trunk or to the highway user distribution fund has in fact gone down in value and not kept up with inflation. We could actually see eroding of revenues under the new formula as a result.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holdred, I'd have to think that through a little bit with how the language is structured and get back to you.
All right.
Chairman?
Can I just ask one quick question? We've already gone over it, and I know we're running out of time here, and we'll have time for more questions tomorrow. But can somebody tell me the rationale for the gas tax credit only starting at age 18 when we have so many drivers at 16 and 17 that, you know, their total yearly income with their part-time job might be $2,000 or $3,000 if they're lucky?
Mr. Chair, you're talking about starting at 18. Basically, it goes kind of with the vehicle, and some of these depend on if they file an income tax report or not. And some people that don't file can file for a credit. I mean, if they don't get any money back or don't pay, they can actually get a credit. That's one of the difficulties with having the tax credit in there.
So, Mr. Chair, in other words, to get the tax credit, you have to be 18 plus have a vehicle registered in your name. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holbrook, not necessarily. They're not checking the vehicle registration, or no.
So, if I might, what would prohibit extending that credit to 16 and 17-year-olds?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holbrook, on an income tax bracket, which one you're in, that's one of the problems. there probably could be people that may not even have a car, but we, the administrative cost to separate those out is beyond what we probably have. That's one of the difficulties with it.
Well, I'm, Mr. Chairman, Representative Leader, I heard you say that they weren't going to check whether 18-year-olds had cars, so it becomes irrelevant whether 16- and 17-year-olds have cars, but they definitely drive a lot and are very low-income earners.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holbrook, I don't know if we can address all of those questions, but basically we don't check if they have a car, but if they file an income tax, that's the only way they can get it, to file an income tax. If they're 16 years old and file an income tax, then I presume they'd be eligible.
And, Mr. Chair, as far as I know, 16 and 17-year-olds I know, they have to file if they earn a certain amount, and generally they get most of it or all of it back, but whatever. Something to consider. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying to figure out this the new language in the flexible highway account and starting on page 29, and I understand we went, you know, we were gone with the turn backs and that sort of thing, and want to make certain we have money for that. But I'd like to know, number one, what the estimated amount in that flexible highway account would be, and trying to understand just how this is going to be administrated here. How are we going to distribute the money?
Is there any change in that flexible highway account? That's the question.
Maybe I don't understand your question, but we just give it to the county. They determine how they're going to spend it. In that flexible account, you're talking about the sales tax.
Mr. Chairman, on page 29 and 30, and I see you added safety improvements on county highways, municipal highways, and number three, routes of regional significance. And I'm trying to figure out how much money we're going to have in the flexible account and how this is going to be distributed amongst those entities, because I think we added those on here.
Mr. Chair,
maybe I'm wrong.
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, the basic decision making on how funds are used out of the flexible highway account stays the same. And it's on the basis of determinations made by the commissioner, but in consultation with the county. What the essence of the change in that provision is to remove funding that currently the commissioner can decide is going fully to trunk highways, not in relation to turnbacks. Eliminate that as being one of the funding targets, and add in two new accounts. One for safety improvements on county highways and municipal highways and so forth, and the other for routes of regional significance.
Representative Stevenson, I think you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Perhaps Mr. Burris can answer this question. 5.5, Article 5, Section 5, Section 4, actually, talking about the excess sum. I'm trying to find the context of this thing, but I guess the wording that seems to me to be problematic is the amount equal to 60% must be apportioned among several counties, which each receives an amount that amounts at the percentage that money needs to bear the sum of the money needs of all of the individual counties. I'm trying to determine how you determine a need, because each county has wants and needs, and is there a specific criteria you're using for needs versus wants?
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Representative Severson, that's the basis of the state aid formula now. They have criteria to determine needs. Every county, every municipality has the same criteria. That's how the needs are determined. And they're determined and reviewed annually. And you can actually review those. They publish an annual report, and you can see those too. But the needs are basically, if a road has a certain traffic volume, certain soil type, certain other factors, all the roads in the state are based same criteria. That's how they determine needs.
council.
Basically by formula.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hausman?
I have just random questions. Are we at that stage, or they aren't?
Well, they've been pretty random so far.
Oh, right. I was trying to track the part of the urban partnership agreement, because in the governor's capital investment bill, there were three parts. There was trunk highway bond, cash, and deal bond. This bill has two of them in, right? It has the cash and the trunk highway bond.
Mr. Bruce?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, this bill just has the trunk highway bond portion.
Oh, what then on page 12 would that 400, what would look like, 400,000?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, that's trunk highway bond.
Oh, yeah, that's the net.
And on page 10, both of those are trunk highway bonds?
Yeah.
So there's no cash either.
Yeah.
And then I couldn't find the language on what is called the North Star Corridor Extension Study Grant. I just couldn't find the language. Is that the extension to Rice, Minnesota, or what is North? I just couldn't find any language in the bill about that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, the language starts on page 2. The last line is the appropriation, but the text that you're probably looking for starts at the top of page 3.
So I like to know that I don't have to put some of these in my bill, because I think that one was in my bill. And then one other, the Hiawatha LRT one-time funding. Is that funding that comes out of the half-cent sales tax increase, or where does that $7 million, where will that come from?
Mr. Bruce?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, that $7.7 million is a general fund appropriation for fiscal year 09 to the Met Council to cover what would be... to cover two things, essentially. There's some complexities with how the operating costs for Hiawatha add up. But essentially, in past appropriations, the Hennepin County has paid 50% of the operating costs, and an appropriation from the state has to the Met Council has been for the remaining 50%. This amount covers the rest of operating costs for fiscal year 09, and somewhat tied to a provision that we didn't get to in Article 5 that prevents county regional rail authorities from paying operating costs for light rail transit or for transit projects in general.
And then just one other, let me not find that language. On page 7, that value capture, would that operate like TIF? That's just a new one for me.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, at this point, the appropriation is for a study, and the concept would be to look at capturing part of property taxes or other valuation increases that are in connection to transportation projects. So it would be it would be determined by the people doing the study, kind of what areas they would look at. But the basic idea is that a new transportation project, such as a light rail line, in the areas around the each of the stops of the light rail line, there might be an increase in property values that's over and above the general increase in that area. And the concept is to look at taking that value increase, that incremental additional amount that because of the light rail line having gone in, and devoting those funds towards transportation.
And that would be the state capturing?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, the study requirements don't get to the level of detail about who would capture the funds or how they would be captured or who they would go to. It's probably better thought of as an evaluation of the feasibility and examination of the concept.
Uh,
Representative Leader, does that wind it up, or do you have more?
The only other, Mr. Chair, the only other thing we have is to, if there's some questions about their breakdown with the counties and the municipals. You have some charts or data in there that shows the breakdown of the county, state, highways, or whatever they get in your particular.
Maybe we could just point them out, since if we want to get out of here in 4 more minutes, bring them out. They're everyone's hands, I assume. You're talking about the county and...
If they ask some questions in that, other than that, leave your opinion, Mr. Chair.
Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I know these will be fine for tomorrow as well, but total general funds in the bill, I see on your two-page, your transportation finance package, total general fund of 1.221 attributed to the Medtronic, but I'm wondering about other expenditures. And then I'd also be curious what components of UPA are covered in this bill and which ones aren't, because it's my understanding that there's more than $10 million in general fund money that's needed for UPA as well. And then I don't know if somebody will be prepared tomorrow to talk about how this works in the context of a budget deficit and a targets or whatever, budget resolution, where's this money coming from in the context of a deficit projected for the general fund.
President Leader.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holbert, regarding UPA, we only take the trunk highway portion in this. We don't take the other portions. We only take that part, the UPA, that needs trunk highway money for trunk highway bonding in this bill.
Okay, and I guess I would be curious if maybe Met Council can testify tomorrow what's left. But again, how does this general fund money, where does it come from in the context of not having new targets and having a forecast with a deficit that is likely going to grow? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman. Representative Nager.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying to understand this language in Section 4 here, the Met Council. It says the Hennepin County Regional Railroad Authority, I'm looking at the bottom of the page on page 5, may not pay any portion of the operating costs for the Hiawatha line in 2009. How are those operating costs going to be paid? Is that covered somewhere else in here? Is that in the previous section here? How are the operating funds for Hiawatha considered here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, in past appropriations bills, roughly 50% of operating costs have been paid by the state through a general fund appropriation to the Metropolitan Council. It's my understanding that the intent going forward would be that the operating costs would be paid through the Metropolitan Area Transportation Sales Tax.
Correct. And Mr. Chairman, is that going to kick in effect in time to cover the 09 operating, fiscal year 09 operating costs for
it? Mr. Ruth?
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, the fiscal year 09 operating costs are covered by the appropriation that you see in that provision, the $7.7
million. Okay. So we're taking,
Representative Magnus?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So we're taking, where's this appropriation? Is this general fund money? So we're taking general fund now to replace the Hennepin County funds. Is that,
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, yes.
Last question.
Hope I get a Christmas card coming.
Anybody else got a question? Last question? Are you finishing, Representative Leader, with your presentation?
I didn't, if there was another question that in here, other than that, we're finished with the presentation.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I think it's time to return. We'll see you all tomorrow.
Thank you. Meeting tomorrow at 4 o'clock.